Kia ora and welcome to A Kiwi Perspective. I'm Graham and today we turn our gaze across the Tasman to Australia, a country that carries a heavy burden of history, cultural erasure and the ongoing fight for justice by its First Nations people. While our shared history in the Pacific Ocean has brought similarities between New Zealand and Australia, there is one glaring difference. Australia has never had a treaty with its Indigenous people, and the implications of this absence are felt in every facet of Aboriginal life. Aotearoa, by contrast, at least has the Treaty of Waitangi, signed in 1840, which is both a legal and moral foundation for Maori as Tangata Whenua, the people of the land. This treaty has not been without its flaws, and the relationship it facilitates is still an ongoing negotiation, but it remains a symbol of acknowledgement and a framework for dialogue. Australia, however, has yet to reckon with its past to the same extent. For Aboriginal Australians, their relationship with the state is often defined by silence, dispossession, and the lack of recognition. Today, we're diving deep into this issue, looking at the state of Aboriginal affairs through a Kiwi perspective, one that is shaped by both the successes and the ongoing struggles of Maori in New Zealand. I'll also turn to one of the most eloquent and controversial figures in the debate on Aboriginal affairs, Stan Grant. Stan Grant is not just a journalist or an academic. He is a voice that is often at the intersection of historical reckoning, cultural identity, and the painful reality of systemic racism. A Wiradjuri man, Grant's experiences and his reflections have shaped much of the current discourse on Aboriginal rights. He has become one of the most vocal critics of Australia's treatment of its Indigenous population, and his words demand our attention. His message is not just about remembering the past, but also about confronting the prejudices of the present. This episode will explore Grant's thoughts on Aboriginal affairs, dissecting both the societal issues and the possibilities for change, all through the lens of someone living in Aotearoa. We'll compare the Maori experience with that of Aboriginal Australians, learn from both successes and failures, and reflect on where we go from here. Part 1. Historical Legacies and the Colonial Wound. The history of Australia, from its colonial inception in 1788, is one of dispossession, violence, and cultural erasure. For over 200 years, the history of Aboriginal Australians has been one of fighting for recognition, fighting for survival, and fighting to have their voices heard. The arrival of the British in Australia marked the beginning of the settler colonial process that would devastate Aboriginal societies, leading to violence, displacement, and a forced assimilation into foreign values. Australia stands as one of the only settler colonial nations to never have signed a treaty with its Indigenous peoples. When Captain Cook claimed the eastern coast of Australia in 1770, the land was deemed terra nullius, meaning land belonging to no one. This legal fiction allowed the British to take ownership of the land without any acknowledgement of the existing Aboriginal nations who had been living there for at least 65,000 years. The term terra nullius was only overturned in the High Court's Mabo decision in 1992, but the damage had already been done. The absence of a treaty has left Aboriginal Australians without a legal and moral framework for negotiating with the Crown or the state, and the consequences of this are still deeply felt. Contrast this with New Zealand's history. The Treaty of Waitangi, signed in 1840, remains a central element of the Maori-Crown relationship, even though its interpretation and implementation have been contentious and inconsistent. For Maori, the treaty provides a point of reference for legal and political rights. Maori have used the treaty's promises of protection and partnership to demand redress for historical wrongs, and despite significant inequities, the treaty has acted as a key tool for Maori self-determination. But for Aboriginal Australians, the lack of such a treaty means they have been fighting for recognition in a system that largely ignores them. In 2008, then Prime Minister Kevin Rudd issued a formal apology to the Stolen Generations, the Aboriginal children taken from their families as part of state policies of assimilation. But this apology was symbolic, and without a treaty, without constitutional recognition, it does little to address the root causes of systemic inequality. In his book, Talking to My Country, Stan Grant expresses the deep pain of being an Aboriginal person in Australia. Grant writes about the trauma of his ancestors, the racism he has faced, and the ongoing struggles to gain recognition in a society that often denies the very existence of Aboriginal cultures. We die 10 years younger. We are more likely to be locked up, to be poor, to be sick, to be unemployed. We are more likely to be taken from our families. My country is a land of beauty and wonder, but it can also be a hard and unwelcoming place for people like me. These words are not just statistics, they are the lived experience of millions of Aboriginal Australians who continue to struggle with the legacy of colonisation. And for many Australians, acknowledging this legacy remains too difficult. Part 2, the voice referendum and national shame. The 2023 referendum on the Indigenous voice to Parliament marked a critical moment in Australia's history. The proposal was simple: enshrine an advisory body for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples in the Constitution, a voice that would have no legislative power but would ensure that Indigenous people were heard in the halls of power. It was a modest proposal that aimed to give Aboriginal Australians a seat at the table in decisions that affect their lives. Yet the proposal was overwhelmingly rejected by over 60% of voters. The referendum was seen by many as a test of Australia's commitment to reconciliation. The fact that the proposal failed speaks volumes about the state of race relations in the country. For Aboriginal Australians, the result was a devastating blow. The voice was not a radical demand. It was a call for the bare minimum, the right to be heard. In the aftermath, Stan Grant was outspoken in his disappointment, describing the result as a national betrayal. The rejection of the voice to Parliament was not just a political defeat, but a cultural wound. The referendum result demonstrated that, in Australia, the nation was not ready to embrace its First Nations peoples as equal citizens. What do we say to our children now that we asked for the softest possible form of recognition? A voice, not a treaty, not reparations, not even sovereignty, just a voice. And even that was too much. For Grant, the result of the referendum reflected deeper issues of racism and denial in Australian society. It illustrated the national discomfort with confronting the legacy of colonisation and the ongoing marginalisation of Aboriginal Australians. The referendum result was a stark reminder that many Australians still view Aboriginal rights as something to be feared rather than respected. This resonates with those of us across the Tasman in New Zealand. The contrast is striking. New Zealand has had Maori representation in Parliament since 1867, and while Maori are still underrepresented, their presence in government is a testament to the value placed on Maori voices in shaping policy. In contrast, Australia's inability to even grant a basic advisory role to Aboriginal Australians reveals the deep-seated inequalities that persist. Part 3, incarceration, education and health inequality. The disparities faced by Aboriginal Australians extend far beyond just political recognition. They permeate every aspect of life, from the education system to the criminal justice system and into health outcomes. These disparities are stark and tell a deeply troubling story about the systemic exclusion and discrimination that Aboriginal Australians face. One of the most tragic and telling statistics is the overrepresentation of Aboriginal Australians in the criminal justice system. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people make up around 3% of Australia's population, but represent nearly 30% of the prison population. This discrepancy is not accidental. It is a consequence of over-policing, racial profiling, and an absence of support structures that address the root causes of crime, such as poverty, lack of education, and systemic trauma. In many remote Aboriginal communities, there is a deep mistrust of the police due to historical experiences of brutality and forced relocation. The Australian police, in turn, often respond with heightened suspicion and aggressive tactics, further exacerbating the tensions. For example, the death of Aboriginal teenager Kumanjai Walker in 2019 during a police operation in the Northern Territory sparked protests and calls for justice. The incident highlighted the over-policing of Aboriginal communities where young people are disproportionately targeted by law enforcement. Stan Grant has been a vocal critic of the incarceration rates, repeatedly drawing attention to the lack of investment in support services for Aboriginal communities. In interviews, he has argued that Australia's justice system is inherently biased noting that it does not take into account the impact of trauma, intergenerational violence, and the dispossession of land, issues at the heart of many Aboriginal experiences. Our people are locked up at alarming rates, yet the system has done little to address the reasons why. We are not criminals by nature, but we are criminalized by the very society that claims to be fair and equal. This over-incarceration is further compounded by significant health inequities. Aboriginal Australians face a life expectancy 10 to 17 years shorter than non-Indigenous Australians, with chronic diseases such as diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and respiratory illness more prevalent in Aboriginal populations. These health disparities are a direct consequence of limited access to healthcare, poor living conditions, and the continued impact of colonization, which has left Aboriginal communities vulnerable to disease, inadequate nutrition, and environmental hazards. In remote communities, healthcare infrastructure is often insufficient, with many communities relying on fly-in, fly-out services or facing long waiting times for medical attention. The lack of culturally appropriate healthcare is also a significant issue. Many Aboriginal people feel alienated from mainstream healthcare services, which are often designed without understanding of their unique cultural needs. Education outcomes for Aboriginal children are similarly bleak. While there have been some improvements in urban areas, the disparity remains widespread in rural and remote communities. Aboriginal children are more likely to attend underfunded schools, more likely to be suspended or expelled, and less likely to finish high school or attend university. This results in a cycle of poverty and unemployment that is difficult to break. While New Zealand has made strides in improving Maori educational outcomes, particularly through Maori medium schools and initiatives that centre on Maori language and culture, Australia has failed to implement any comprehensive nationwide strategy to address these issues for its Aboriginal population. For example, Maori medium schools have played an instrumental role in bridging the education gap for Maori students, providing a culturally relevant curriculum that speaks to their heritage, language, and worldview. In Australia, the government's response has often been piecemeal and ineffective. Indigenous education programs have lacked consistent funding, and the broader educational framework is still predominantly Eurocentric, leaving little room for Aboriginal perspectives or needs. This systemic neglect has led to decades of educational failure and entrenched social inequality. Grant has been unequivocal in his calls for change, not only in terms of policy, but also in the public consciousness. He stresses the need for more than just lip service. What is required is a genuine commitment to changing the systems that perpetuate inequality. We need systemic change, not a band-aid solution, not just some symbolic gestures. We need long-term, meaningful investment in our communities, in education, healthcare, and justice. These calls for change resonate strongly with New Zealand's approach, where the government has, at least in part, acknowledged Maori as an integral part of the national fabric. While New Zealand has its own challenges, including an education system that still struggles to meet the needs of Maori students in some regions, the country has at least made the effort to develop initiatives that are culturally relevant and inclusive of Maori perspectives. This is something Australia has yet to fully address for Aboriginal Australians. Part 4, Cultural Survival and Media Misrepresentation. Despite the significant challenges, Aboriginal Australians have demonstrated remarkable resilience in preserving and revitalizing their culture. The survival of Aboriginal languages, ceremonies, and practices is a testament to the strength and determination of Aboriginal communities. Yet this survival has not been without its challenges, especially when it comes to the portrayal of Aboriginal people in the media. The media in Australia has historically been complicit in perpetuating stereotypes about Aboriginal Australians. Indigenous people are often framed in one of two ways, as helpless victims or as dangerous criminals. These reductive representations do not reflect the complexity of Aboriginal culture and identity, nor do they acknowledge the agency of Aboriginal people to shape their own futures. Stan Grant has been a sharp critic of this media portrayal. In his National Press Club address in 2021, he talked about how the media continues to perpetuate damaging stereotypes while failing to show the diversity, richness, and vibrancy of Aboriginal cultures. The stories we tell about ourselves are often stories of pain and suffering, but there is so much more to us than that. We are artists, we are scholars, we are teachers, we are healers. But when you turn on the TV, that's not the story you see. This lack of nuanced representation perpetuates a cycle of marginalization where Aboriginal Australians are never allowed to fully define themselves outside of the dominant narrative. The invisibility of Aboriginal culture in mainstream media creates an environment where racism and prejudice can flourish unchallenged. In New Zealand, Maori media have done much more to challenge stereotypes and elevate Maori voices. The existence of Maori language television and radio stations, Maori-led media outlets, and the growing visibility of Maori public figures has helped to shift the narrative around Maori culture. While challenges remain, the representation of Maori in New Zealand is far more nuanced and inclusive than the portrayal of Aboriginal Australians in Australia's media landscape. The difference in media representation between the two countries is stark. In New Zealand, there has been an active effort to include Maori perspectives in mainstream narratives, while Australia's media continues to focus on stereotypical, one-dimensional portrayals of Aboriginal life. Part 5. Comparing Maori and Aboriginal revivals. The revival of Indigenous cultures is an essential part of the journey towards self-determination, and both Maori and Aboriginal peoples have made significant strides in this area. However, the pathways to cultural revival have been vastly different due to the distinct historical, legal, and political contexts each group faces. In New Zealand, Maori have made notable progress in language revitalization, land rights, and political representation. The Treaty of Waitangi, despite its flaws, has provided a framework through which Maori have been able to demand recognition and redress. Through the Waitangi Tribunal, Maori have secured compensation for historical injustices, including land losses and breaches of the treaty. The Maori language has also experienced a revival thanks to initiatives like Maori medium schools, which educate students entirely in the Maori language. This has led to an increase in the number of fluent speakers and a resurgence of pride in Maori identity. Cultural festivals like the biennial Te Matatini Kapa Haka Festival have helped to showcase the vibrancy and strength of Maori traditions, attracting both domestic and international audiences. In contrast, Aboriginal Australians have not had the same institutional support to revive their culture. While there have been efforts to preserve languages and cultural practices, these efforts have largely been community-driven rather than supported by the state. The lack of a formal treaty or any legal recognition of Aboriginal sovereignty means that Aboriginal culture and language revitalization efforts are often seen as secondary to the mainstream agenda, leading to resource shortages and institutional neglect. That said, there is a growing movement among young Aboriginal Australians to reconnect with their heritage. Organizations like the Australian Indigenous Mentoring Experience, AIME, and the National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Women's Alliance are playing crucial roles in empowering young Aboriginal people to reclaim their culture, language, and identity. However, these efforts often lack the robust legal and financial support that Maori revival initiatives have received. The key difference between Maori and Aboriginal cultural revivals is the political and legal frameworks that support these efforts. Maori and New Zealand benefit from a treaty-based system that allows them to advocate for their rights and protect their cultural heritage through formal channels. Aboriginal Australians, on the other hand, continue to struggle for recognition and resources in a political system that often sidelines their needs. Part 6. Where to from here? A Kiwi reflection. As we reflect on the ongoing struggle for Aboriginal rights in Australia, it's clear that there is no easy answer. The road to justice for Aboriginal Australians is long, and it requires a collective reckoning with the country's colonial past. For those of us in New Zealand, it's easy to feel frustration at the pace of change across the Tasman, but there is hope. Stan Grant's message is clear. There is no future for Australia unless it confronts the truth about its past. And for that, Aboriginal Australians need more than just symbolic gestures. They need real, structural change. New Zealand's experience with the Treaty of Waitangi provides valuable lessons for Australia. While the treaty is far from perfect, it has offered Maori a means of asserting their rights and a platform for negotiating with the Crown. The question for Australia is whether it will ever find a way to offer Aboriginal Australians a similar framework for justice and self-determination. Ultimately, the question is not just how to fix Aboriginal affairs, but how to build a future where Aboriginal Australians are treated as equals. Until that happens, the work of people like Stan Grant will remain essential in pushing the nation toward the truth and reconciliation that is so urgently needed. Thank you for joining me on A Kiwi Perspective today. I'm Graham, and I hope this episode has provided a deeper understanding of the struggles and hopes of Aboriginal Australians. Until next time, Hairera.